Hello, welcome to this edition of the Bearcats Blogcast. My name is Scott, joined by Chris Baines, back from the dead. How's it going,
Chris? Hello! Pretty good. I haven't talked to you in like 2 months, and it's been 2 months too long. But we come back on a high note. UC beat the tar out of Tulane, as if anyone had any questions, 78-49 last night. They are 26-4. They're 15-2 in the AAC. They are heading into a huge game against Wichita State at Wichita State on Sunday at noon on CBS, the flagship network, not buried on CBS Sportsnet. So only four people can watch those games. Scott, thoughts from last night, other than the fact that UC looked really, really good and Tulane is really, really terrible, and why are they in this conference?
I don't think you can talk about last night's game without, like, breathing a hopeful sigh of relief that Jacob Evans isn't seriously injured. Like, that was, like, your big worry is, like, somebody gets hurt in, like, one of these, like, dumb games at the end of the season, somebody who's not good. And then, like, UC's up, I think, like, 12 points, and Jacob Evans goes down, like, holding his ankle and, like, yelling, like, fuck, like, 800 times. And it's like, oh god, the season's over, they can't win without Jacob Evans. But now it seems like he's doing better. And even if he doesn't play against Wichita State, that's not the goal. The goal is to have him ready, right? At least the conference tournament, and at least by the NCAA tournament. Because I doubt their standing is going to change too much during the AAC tournament. Unless, like, they, even if they flamed out and lost the first game, they'll probably still be like a 3 seed or a 4 seed. Like, maybe if Wichita State beat them and then Wichita State won the tournament, like, Wichita would be a 3 and UC would be a 4. Like, you're definitely locked in somewhere, like, there. Like, a protected seat, at least. And, like, having Jacob Evans just be healthy for your, like, really important games is all that really matters. And, like, the one thing you didn't say is UC won a share of the AAC title, which is only the second time they've done that.
That is true. I kind of had an opposite reaction to Jacob Evans going down. Like, initially when he started to limp, I was, you know, the same way, held my breath, you know, picturing just the darkest timeline coming, a Kenyon Martin reboot. But I felt a little bit of relief knowing that he grabbed his ankle and not something like a knee. Like, I was picturing, like, torn ACL. Because, like, when he landed, he definitely landed funky off of that jumper. But he immediately grabbed the ankle, which I'm thinking, okay, it's an ankle. I'm not a doctor, but it seems like if you're going to grab anything in the lower extremities, I'd rather he grab an ankle instead of a knee. Because, like, an ankle, it could just be just he twisted his ankle falling down weird. Like, he landed on his toes and his legs and his upper body kept moving, but his foot didn't move. And he twisted it or something like that. So I felt a little thankful that it was just the ankle as opposed to the knee. And it doesn't sound like it was that egregious of an injury so far. I mean, just kind of like combing through some of the reports, like overnight, it sounds like it's something he can probably battle through, and all he needs to do is just keep off it for a couple of days, probably ice it, and then he'd be ready for Wichita State. If not, like, to your point, the AAC tournament and the NCAAs. So I'm hopeful. I'm hopefully optimistic about that injury.
And it was, like, good. Like, he actually stayed on the bench the whole game instead of going to the locker room. And, like, he took pictures with his family since he's from, like, Louisiana. Like, so, like, that was at least, like, reassuring in a sense that he wasn't.
Right.
Like, yeah, if it was his knee, I would have cried all night and be crying through this podcast. Like, at least it being his ankle, it's like, even if it's a high ankle sprain, that's something you can play with. And, like, granted, we still don't know the severity of the injury, because I don't think they've done any tests yet, or at least they haven't released the results, which they don't have to do, really. But yeah, well, we'll find out. And even if, like, they don't have him going into Wichita, I think they have, like, we saw enough from, like, the guys last night. Like, Keith Williams played, I think, probably his best overall game of the season. Like, he got 27
Oh, yeah,
minutes.
Surprise. You give a talented player significant minutes and they can shine. Where have we seen that before this season?
In
not to bring up the Kane Broome versus Justin Jennifer debate, but go ahead.
And we saw like a good game out of Kane Broome too. That's the very next thing I was about to get to. So,
but I mean, yeah, I think the Jacob Evans injury was kind of like a shocker, but yeah, I'm not too worried about it. I mean, I guess we'll kind of figure out over the next couple of days, but, yeah, I mean, to your point, you know, Keith Williams filled in appropriately, and I mean, let's be realistic. Tulane is not a good basketball team. The announcers were trying to hype up them as being better than last year, which I don't know about that, but they're not a very good basketball team. Like, I could have probably scored 10 points on them. Just the ways that they play defense. Like, how many times do we see open looks to all the big men? And hell, even Kane Broome was able to slip behind the big man and get an open layup in the second half. Like, Tulane is not a good basketball team, but it was at least encouraging to see that if you had to be without Jacob Evans for a game or two, it seems like UC has enough depth on the bench and, you know, talent around them in Kane Broome and Jacob Evans and obviously Jerron Cumberland and, you know, obviously Gary Clark, Kyle Washington, to kind of weather that storm of him being out for maybe a game or two.
Yeah, that's a good point. And, like, speaking of Tulane's big men, like, not very good.
Awful.
And
awful.
I think the highlight of the game may have been Keith Williams, like, blocking the hell out of that one guy's shot.
I think, oh, okay. Good choice.
So that was the only shot that guy attempted, 6'10 freshman center, Ajang. And, like, he got like, stuffed right down his throat. It was, like, kind of amazing. Yep, Tulane was pretty awful last year. They were 6-25, so this is definitely better. But like,
they're like relatively.
But like you said, like if they were 4-5 in league play, and now they're 5-12, probably going to be 5-13. Their only wins since they upset Houston are against East Carolina and South Florida. So it's like the reality of playing like tough games, like, day in and day out, has really gotten to them. After they got off to a pretty decent start, they were 10-3 at one point.
So, yeah, I mean, I think earlier in the season we were even saying, like, they could even be a sneaky NCAA team, like, if everything falls their way. But yeah, they kind of reverted back to the mean as far as being a terrible basketball team. I mean, I don't know what I mean. As far as, like, major headlines from, like, last night, I couldn't really think of anything other than the fact that, you know, Trevor Moore and Keith Williams look pretty solid in backup roles. I'm not going to light the world on fire, but, you know, Kane Broome continues to be the player that we were hoping him to be. He got 25 minutes and played 25 good minutes last night. What are your thoughts, Scott, on him starting over Justin Jennifer?
Well, I think the only debate, like, UC fans have had all year is, like, the Broome versus Jennifer thing. Because it's, like, I don't know, it doesn't make a lot of sense, especially since Broome has been playing so well lately, especially over the last month he's averaging double digits. So, like, I think you can definitely look and see, like, oh, why doesn't the guy who's actually good start? But, like, if Jennifer's just going to play, like, the first, like, 5 minutes and then not play, really, the rest of the game, I can't get too worked up about it. What about you?
Yeah, I'm kind of, like, I'm kind of in that second mindset that you mentioned. Like, it doesn't really matter who starts the game, because what happens in probably the first, you know, segment, that first 4 minutes, isn't really going to dictate the rest of the game and the ultimate outcome. Like, ultimately, last night, Kane Broome had 25 minutes, Justin Jefferson has 17. That's been kind of the split the last few weeks. But at the same time, like, if it doesn't really matter who's, you know, who starts, if Kane Broome is getting more minutes, why not just start Kane Broome? You know, like, that's one of the questions I would have. It's kind of nitpicky, I guess, just because, you know, like you said, Kane Broome is still getting most of the minutes. But it's still also like, you know, if it doesn't really matter, why not just start Kane Broome instead? Like, what's the benefit of starting Justin Jennifer?
You know, it's like, like, you can think of, like, some, like, answer to have. But with how much, like, they play the starters, it kind of doesn't make really a ton of sense. As long as you have Broome on the floor when, like, the short minutes when Jacob Evans rests. So, I really don't really know. Like, because Cumberland plays, like, in conference games, Cumberland's playing 30 minutes, Evans 32, Clark 29, Washington 24, and Broome 20, and Jennifer, like, 18 and a half. It's like, yeah.
But that's been shifting, though. Like, you can, I mean, if you looked at the beginning of the season, I'm sure Jennifer was around 20, 25, and Broome was around 15 to 20, right? Like, it's probably definitely shifted in the last few weeks, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Outside of, like, the Houston game where Jennifer played, like, a ton of minutes. Yeah, like, I really don't know. Like, what the difference is. Unless, like, Nick just wants, like, punch off the bench. That's the only thing I could imagine. But even then, like, I don't know. Like, Trey Scott has had a couple of big games, like, the last couple of games. Like, 10 points last night. Like, nearly put up a double-double against UConn. Like, I know those were two, like, blowout wins. But just seeing him be a little bit of a force offensively is pretty nice.
But I guess that is a good point. Yeah, go ahead.
But I guess if you didn't have Jen or Broome doing anything off the bench, like, nobody would score off the bench. But I don't know. Like, is their bench scoring really something that's important when they play the starters so much? I feel like it's not really in college like it is in the pros. Because in college, you have so many frequent timeouts where you can get your guys rest. And you can do the thing where you sub somebody out at, like, 12:30 to get them even a little bit more rest for that under 12 timeout.
Yeah, and that's a good point. Like, the starters play so often that, you know, you kind of want them to mesh with the best possible point guard you can put out there. So why aren't you starting with Kane Broome and letting him start meshing with the rest of the starters for the game? Honestly, it's kind of like a moot point, because I don't know if there's any real correlation to Jennifer starting but getting less minutes than Kane Broome over Kane Broome starting and getting more minutes than Justin Jennifer, as far as, like, the, you know, outcome of the game is concerned. It's just, like, one of those questions that I had over the last couple of weeks. Like, I mean, it doesn't really matter if he starts, but, you know, if he's getting more minutes anyways, and then, well, why wouldn't you just start him anyways? So I don't know. Just wanted to ask you. But I mean, you bring up a good point about Trey Scott. Like, he's looked really, really strong in the last few weeks. I mean, he even looked pretty solid against Wichita State a couple of weeks ago. And I know we've kind of been talking about it all season. Like, who the hell takes over for Gary Clark and who the hell takes over for Gary Clark and Kyle Washington after this year? And Trey Scott looks pretty reliable so far in coming in, as well as Sosame. I mean, I'm still worried about Brooks, and I don't know what DR is going to give us, but Scott and Sosame looked solid as replacements next year from what they've shown in limited minutes so far this season.
Yeah, I think that's something that's definitely encouraging, because, like, Scott's really started to shine offensively.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, his rebounding is something that really hadn't been there a ton. But if he's going to bring that, like, every game, like, and just keep his, like, effort level high, that's really all you can ask for.
Right.
Like, Brooks seems like is still, like, a little bit, a lot more tentative offensively. But if, like, you can get those guys going, just somewhat, like, next year doesn't seem like it would be as big a drop off as like we expect. So, like, it's definitely going to be some because like Gary Clark is like amazing and like probably, not probably, he's like definitely the second best player of the Cronin era, like behind right. Kilpatrick. Like just but yep. important wise, he's got to be like right up there too, just because he like runs the defense. It's like just having somebody like that, like go away, it's going to be a little bit of a drop off, but I think we've seen enough from like Scott, like offensively, and like Mick really just Brooks. So maybe they have something in the tank, but then again, like Brooks didn't even play against Tulane, so it seems like it. I don't know, it seems like there's still some ways to go with those guys.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, it's definitely going to be a weakness coming into next season, but you just, I guess you got to hope that, you know, where the strength of the team this year was kind of more in the among the bigs, you got to hope that that shifts next year to where the guards are going to be carrying the team more so than the bigs inside. I mean, the only concern I have is just rebounding. I mean, UC relies on rebounding more than several other factors in the game. You know, that's a lot of their defensive stops is just basically being able to gobble up those defensive rebounds and then generating extra offense with offensive rebounds. I mean, that's a big part of how they win games is owning the glass. And I don't know. Gary and Kyle are so, especially Gary, are so good about getting those. I'm worried about that drop off coming into next year. But yeah, we'll see. We'll just have to see how that goes.
That is one of the things that's made like Trey Scott's like last couple of games sick encouraging. It's like he's been killing the glass, like 6 rebounds, 7 rebounds, 9 rebounds against UConn. Like that's a pretty solid effort at getting around like 20 minutes a game.
Right, that's true. That is what we talked about. I mean, he's had a pretty good game underneath. He's always been like a high energy player. It seems like it's just he hasn't. He's never really been able to like channel it, which it makes total sense. I think he's a sophomore or a junior at this point, so he's still had a couple of years to kind of come around. But he's a sophomore, yeah. So he's still young. It's nice that he's kind of showing those signs coming into the like later in the season that he can hopefully kind of build upon going into his junior and senior year.
It's like one of the things, like you just want your third big to give you like rebounding and defense and not be afraid to shoot. And now he's like really killing the glass and he's not afraid to shoot, which is like just pretty great because like Kyle Washington seems like he's kind of like stuck in the role where he's going to play like 20 to 25 minutes a game and do whatever he can offensively. And you have to rely on whoever else defensively, which isn't really a bad thing, I guess.
Right. Yeah, and if there's one thing that we can probably say that, you know, Gary Clark, or where there's kind of a slight, you know, chink in Gary Clark's armor, is that he doesn't seem, like, aggressive enough underneath when he gets an offensive rebound. It seems like he's always constantly getting the offensive rebound and kicking it out or throwing it over to Kyle Washington. He doesn't go up with it himself. Trey Scott has no fear about doing that whenever. I mean, sometimes he does it when he's too far away from the basket and it's a clunker, but at least he has the mentality to go right back up with it as soon as he grabs a rebound. We'll see how he builds upon those little mindsets going into, you know, his year as an upperclassman. But
I guess that you can just say that's been like a Gary Clark, like the one knock on his game since he's been a Bearcat.
Right. He's too nice. He's too nice of a kid. He is just too nice of a kid. Yeah, he needs to go like watch Black Panther or something and get angry and mean and get inspired and then go kick the ass of whoever the hell is going to be guarding him on Sunday.
The 4 points Gary Clark scored last night was the fewest points he scored all season. Kind of surprising that it came against Tulane of all teams.
Yeah, I mean, he basically accounted for like half of Kyle Washington's points, though. All of his assists and rebounds and stuff like that. Yeah, and Kyle Washington had 16 points, so.
Yeah, 9 boards, 4 assists for Gary Clark. 3 steals. Like, it's still an all-around great game. Just the points. Like, you don't expect, them to blow out Tulane by 29 points and Gary Clark to only score 4. Jacob Evans played, 10 minutes.
Well, Gary also never went to the line. Like, he's... Like, what is he shooting this year? Like, 88% from the line? Like, that's how he gets a lot of his points. He never went to the line last night, which is really weird. And that also goes back to kind of our point. Like, what? Like, dude, Gary, go up with the ball every now and then and get a rebound. You're good enough to at least draw a foul.
It's 75% at the line this year.
75, okay. Still good for a big.
Yeah, definitely. And, it's continued his improvement, throughout his whole career. Although, he is down to 67% in league play, which may have something to do with his legs, but I don't know.
Yeah, that's weird. Maybe. I mean, yeah, he could just be, just getting tired. I don't know.
That's the only inefficiency in his game, really, is that he's merely a good free throw shooter and not, a great free throw shooter.
Yeah.
It's like everything else. Like, he's shooting 55% from 3 in conference play. Mm-hmm. He's shooting 45% from 3 this year and in 51 attempts. Like, that's kind of crazy.
The kid can actually stroke it from outside. Like, he and Kyle Washington, they're not going to, knock down everything from outside, but they're not bad.
Oh, definitely not. Like, you have to respect them from deep. Which,
when Justin Jackson used to pull up from 3, it would be like, oh, God. Him and, Titus Rubles was just the biggest, face-palming, Bearcats I could think of recently when they would pull up from 3. But, I have no problem of Gary Clark or Kyle Washington, pulling up for 1 or 2 a game.
Oh, yeah, because they actually have, good shots and good their jumpers look good, going off their hands. Like, Titus Rubles. Like, he was a nice player. But his three-point shooting was, so unbelievably bad that he attempted 3 threes his second season. He was 4 of 43. I'm like, oh, my God.
Oh, my God, yeah. I do miss Titus.
That dude too. He was a fun player.
He was a hell of a rebounder, honestly. He was he had his flaws, but man, he could rebound the hell out of the ball.
Yeah, talk about those energy guys. He definitely brought it, every game. He did all he could.
Right.
Except shoot the 3. He was one of those guys, the people would groan when he would put up the 3. Oh, please don't shoot.
Oh, man. I miss that man.
Crazy thing, he made 3 threes in 1 game against St. John's. He was 3 of 6. That means in the whole rest of his UC career, he was 1 of 37.
Well, it says something when you have the mindset of going 1 of 37 for almost every game of your career from 3 and still having that mindset to keep shooting it. I mean, if at first you don't succeed, right?
Oh, no. He was 1 of 40. I'm bad at doing math. Yeah, because 46 total attempts. Take away those 6. Yeah, he was 1 of 40.
Oh, God, Titus. Oh, my God.
Oh my God! I forgot it was that bad. It's we could definitely go out. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
We could go out there for a whole season and maybe go 1 of 40, because somebody would leave us open. So we'd probably be able to at least make 1, right?
I would think so, because yeah, you're right. Like, eventually through ball movement, if we. Like, okay, let's assume that we basically knew the offense enough to actually run it the way the coaches want to, and, they tailored the plays to get us open. Like, I gotta imagine between the two of us, we could at least make 1 shot out of 40.
Yeah.
Well, like, that doesn't seem that difficult.
Well, they wouldn't have to tailor the offense to us. They would just have to get us out of the way on offense. So, like, we just go stand in the corner and the other players do all the things. And so, like, the defense just sags off of us so much that we were able to get, like, a one shot up. Because if they actually guarded us, they'd have no chance.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, if they sat, like, well, I'm 6 foot, so if they sat any basketball player, it could be the shortest guard in the league, it could be the tallest forward, it could be anybody. I I'm not getting a ball up over an outstretched arm, like, no way. So, yeah, it would have to be some kind of situation where they basically rotate the ball for like 30 seconds or whatever, and then just throw it to us the last three or something, and just we just happen to be wide open in the corner, just hiding.
Yeah, just hiding, and then somebody sees you, and like, oh, he's open. It'd be like the walk-on moments, except...
That's right.
It's like the walk, except the walk-ons are actually good.
Yeah, actually, okay, so let's look at that. Let's look at that for a second. So, some of the walk-on three-point percentages over the last, like, however many years. Like, is it better than 1 of 40? I gotta believe it's better than 1 of 40 among the walk-ons.
Ooh, that's an interesting question. It's gotta be, you would think. Because, have the walk-ons even attempted shots this year? I don't think that, have they? I don't know. They don't show up.
Jackson Bart is 40% from three. I'm pretty sure he saw shot two. He has, look. Look faster, ESPN. He has shot. He has one, two. Yeah, he shot five. He's made two. So, yeah, he's 40%. So he's already, like, in one season, he's beaten Titus Rubel's, like, pretty much career, like, percentage.
See, Zach Tobler went 2 of 5 last season. Yeah, last season. So he got halfway to Titus Rubel's total.
Oh my god. I still reiterate that I miss that man. No matter how much we're kind of focusing this podcast on ragging on his 3-point shooting. anywho.
Oh yeah, that was to say, like, look at these bigs. They can knock them down, like, so consistently. Kyle Washington... 16 of 41 from 3, 39%. Like, you take that from your guards, and you're getting it from Kyle Washington. Like, it's almost to the point where, like, Kyle Washington shooting a 3 is, like, a little bit better than Cumberland shooting a 3.
Ooh.
Cumberland's only at 33%.
Yeah. He's been, well, he's only at 31. He was so bad for, like, 2 months, though.
But he's only at 31% in league play. He's got his, like, jumper has gotten a little bit worse.
But yeah,
he's definitely made up for it by, like, he's shooting 55% on 2-pointers, and he's up to 74% from the line. Which, to your point, he was terrible from the line to start the year, and now he's got his percentage up to 66%, which, like, isn't, like, amazing. But, like, 53 attempts in league play, and he's, like, at 74%. That's, like, it's right. Pretty good. He's come along as the season's progressed.
That's true. Yeah. He's not like a liability. I feel like I don't need to, like, apologize for him, like, on Twitter anymore.
And, like, in the two losses, like, he played really well against Houston and SMU. It's, like, kind of cooled down. It's just kind of weird that he would cool down when, like, you see, like, it ends up in blowouts. Except he was, like, really pivotal in them winning the Tulsa game, which where they played not very well, like, the majority of that game. Do you have any overall?
Yeah, he's.
Oh, go ahead.
I was gonna say, yeah, he's kind of a bit of. He's been a. He's. I wouldn't call it, like, drawing a. In a sophomore slump, because, I mean, I don't know. He's averaging 11 points a game. He's shooting you know, 40% from the field, to your point, like, in the 50s, like, and two-pointers recently. So, but he's just been such a, he's been such an off-and-on player this year, so Jekyll and Hyde, that it's, I don't know. Hopefully it just kind of stabilizes, like, as he becomes an upperclassman as well. But it's just, it's been an odd year for Jaron. But go ahead.
It's going to be interesting next year when, like, he may not be, like, the only, like, big returning starter back. It's like the question that going into the offseason is, like, what the hell does Jacob Evans do? Like, you got to think he's going to definitely declare. But who's he going to in the draft? Who knows? But, like, he's, like, it would be dumb if he didn't declare, with the, given the way the rules are now, where you can go and work out for teams. It just wouldn't make sense. But, like, him coming back, like, next season and being, like, the consistent scorer, like, as you mentioned, is really the only thing that's missing in his game. It's like, because he's, like, just as liable to throw a single-digit game at you as he is, like, a double-digit, like, transit, has a good game. Like, he just needs to find his consistency. which is kind of hard, like, with this team where, like, you have Kyle Washington who's capable of throwing up, like, 15 points given the matchup, and, like, Gary's been getting his in league play, and then you have, like, Jacob Evans with the ball most of the time.
Yeah, I mean, my only hope is, like, yeah, if Jacob Evans declares, which, yeah, he totally should, you kind of know that Kane Broom finally got his feet under him playing at a higher level and can and be that consistent scorer if UC needs him to be. And, you know, hopefully Trevor Moore continues to blossom, and then Jaron doesn't need to be the guy next year. And that's what you hope for, at least.
Transcendent, that's the word I was thinking of.
$1 million word. I don't know. I mean, I feel like it's one of those situations where, like, I could totally see Jaron continuing to not, like, flounder, but just, like, be inconsistent in kind of a starting role. But you gotta hope that Kane Broom, now that he's you know, figured stuff out, he can continue to be a consistent scorer as well and kind of back Jaron up if he needs to be.
Yeah, as long as you have, like, one of those two guys cooking, like, I think you're pretty much fine. Like, we get them both going. Like, UC's obviously a much better team. If you can just get, like, that one other option going, that's really huge. And, like, that's, like, one thing, if, like, you're just going to, like, flash forward picture, which we're, like, trying not to do. Try to just focus on, like, the current games and not the whatever future games. Like, that is the one thing you worry about, like, in the conference tournament, or even, like, at Wichita State, is, like, you just, like wonder, like, if UC can get the consistency from, like, everybody. So, like, when teams, like, focus up on, like, Evans and Clark and try to take them away, like, this team can be a bit, like, one-dimensional. And, like, to come with credit, like, he and Broom, like, both had monster games against Wichita the first time. And, like, they nearly carried UC to that win. But then, like, at the game at Houston, like, Cumberland had a pretty solid game. But then, like, you got, like, nothing from Broom. You got nothing from the bench in general that game. And, like, some of the guys had a couple of poor shooting nights. So, like, yeah, it kind of is what it is with that. But I don't know. What are your thoughts about that, Chris?
Like, do you I hate it. I hate thinking about that because it's, like, I kind of forgive them for having off nights, but then it's like you can't have an off night in elimination games, right? So it's like I don't know. I'm not sure what to chalk it up to. I mean, UC just needs to get hot. They need to be like the UConn of a few years ago, who were hot garbage heading into the conference tournament, and then lit it up in the conference tournament, and then lit it up in the NCAA tournament to a national title, like. That's just all you have to have. Like, you just need to just get hot and get consistent at the right time. And unfortunately, you can't really you know, plan for or predict that.
Yeah, I think, like, the more concerning thing than the offense has been, like, in some of these games lately, like, the defense has kind of slipped a little bit. Like, just Houston and put over a point per possession on them. Like, Wichita was really efficient. And then, so, like, Tulsa was, like, insanely efficient. Like, that game was kind of, like, usually, like, just, I don't know, maybe it was, like, the senior day itis, but giving up, like, 1.23 points per possession to Tulsa, like, was not really great. It's like, they hadn't been scored on like that in a long time. Like, not even Xavier scored like that against UC. But, like, the Bearcats scored 80 points and, like, won that game. So, like, if they can, like, have that kind of offense, it's, like, reassuring. And, like, their offense has really been solid lately. Like, 77, 82, 78.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Is, like, I feel like as long as UC can be dynamic enough to, you know, win the rock fights as well as win the shootouts, I think they should be fine in the NCAA tournament. And it's almost like it's almost a blessing that they lost to Wichita State, you know, the way they did a couple of weeks ago, because they're A, going to be prepared for this Sunday, knowing that, you know, worst case scenario, Wichita State shoots, what, 50% from the field. They only lost by 4. UC is prepared for that, and I'm sure Mick Cronin is drawing up plays right now in his head to counter that. But they're also going to be prepared for any, like, one of those teams heading into the NCAA tournament. Like, I don't know, hell, they face a Villanova in the NCAA tournament. They wind up facing Xavier again or whatever. You know, they've seen enough teams that are so prolific offensively that UC needs to step up their game in that respect as well. And then hopefully, you know, Mick Cronin has a few plays drawn up to kind of get some good stops near the end of those games, knowing what he's seen, you know, seen like the rest of the season or this past season.
Yeah, let's talk about, like, Wichita, since it's the last big important game of the year before the conference. Like, they've been the hottest team in the league, obviously, since they beat UC. Like, since the calendar turned to February. The overtime loss against Temple, it's the only game they blew. Like, they've had a couple of close calls, like, especially against Temple. And last night against UCF, that game went to overtime. But, like, that's their senior day. Like, Shaq Morris, who was killed UC the first time. Then, like, I think Freeney Camp's a senior. It could be, like, Landry Shamit's last game. Like, this is going to be a really emotional day. And if, like, UC can do kind of what, like, Tulsa did to them and just jump on them, like, right from the tip, I think they have a pretty good chance at pulling off an upset. Because, like, as you mentioned, the three-point shooting, like, you got to imagine, like, they don't give Wichita as many wide open looks as they did the first time.
Yeah, and that's you gotta definitely hope for that. And I'm hopeful because UC saw them at home and saw what Wichita State could do to them at home if their offense is clicking. But then I'm also extremely nervous. You know, to your point, it's senior day. There's gonna be a ton of energy in that arena. I don't know the last time Wichita, you know, hosted, you know, a team with as high a ranking as UC is. Like, I mean, not even talking about, like, their time in the Missouri Valley Conference, but, like, I don't know, ever. Like, I'm looking back through their schedules, like, the last few years. I mean, they played top, you know, ranked teams on neutral site courts, but let's see. I don't know. I'm going back.
But They did host Oklahoma this year.
Oh, were they ranked at that time though?
It's I don't know where Oklahoma was ranked. I don't know if they were ranked that. They definitely weren't ranked as highly as he is.
Right. So you're right. They hosted Oklahoma when Wichita State was third and Oklahoma was unranked. But like, if I'm looking through like Wichita State's quick history, I mean they hosted a number 25 Utah in 2015. Still trying to find top 25 teams they played.
You're definitely not going to see like any dirt in the valley.
Well, that's the thing. Like we'd have to go back, what, like 40 years or something, the last time they hosted a top 25 team in their own conference, especially not let alone a top 10 team. Okay, so they hosted number 18 UNLV in 2011. It's point is few and far between. So like I expect the energy in that arena to be just off the charts on Sunday. So I don't know. UC hasn't really faced that this season aside from the Xavier game, and you know you saw how kind of they responded there. They didn't. So, I don't know. I'm a little nervous about that aspect. Just the fact that they have to finish the year on senior day in such a critical game to either win the AAC regular season outright or, you know, share it with Wichita State. And obviously Wichita State is basically playing in that game to win a share. So there's a ton of motivation on their end. And it's on the road.
So. And, like, it's like going back and looking at the Houston game. Like, that was a pretty tight game, and it seemed like the home atmosphere, I know it wasn't at like Houston's arena, like that home crowd really carried Houston through the end of that game where they made like a lot of big plays down the stretch. And I think it was Davis. Like clearly like influenced by the home crowd was just like feeling it late. And like that's something he played off of, and unfortunately. And you know, like guys like Fraincamp, who's like really a shooter, like Shamit's just like really good, he's gonna bring it home or the road. Like there's always a boost in like your role players like step when they go or when they're in front of their home crowd. And like some of the guys on senior day, like Morris, like maybe he has a monster game in like his last home game. I like their two best players, like they're gonna be good no matter what. It's just like some of the bench guys you have to just like get a hand in their face.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough road environment. I'm not going to put it past any team to take it to UC this year. I mean, I think UC is going to hang with any team in the country. I don't know if they win this game. I think it's going to be really, really tight. I mean, for some reason, ESPN's matchup predictor has UC as a slight edge, you know, winning 51.1% of matchups. But it's just there's so many other factors that are weighing against UC in this game where I'm extremely nervous. So I don't know. I just wish UC had beat Wichita State at home. We could put this conversation to bed.
But the ESPN's like numbers, like the BPI like really loves UC. I know like everybody saw scrolling through the game. Like they have like UC like one like the top like five or six like title contenders. They have their computerized UC number 6 in the country, and like Wichita State number 11. It's like the numbers, like this team are insane, and like they're back up to number 4 on KenPom because they just destroyed somebody by 30 points on the road.
Gotta love KenPom. I don't know. What do you think, Scott? You haven't really been like sharing your thoughts on the game, other than throwing out data.
I don't know. It's going to be a tough one, and I'm not really sure that they're going to pull it out, just because it's really a tough place to play. But I think, like, the edge there, like, UC, like, wants that outright title, because they haven't done it yet. Like, they did win a share back in 2014.
But like, yeah, and honestly, who really cares about a share?
And they ended up the one seed in the conference tournament, which was a disaster in hindsight. But, like, it's like the feeling with that team was, like, they blew the regular season title because they had UConn and Louisville, like, back-to-back, and they lost heartbreaker to Louisville, and they lost a heartbreaker on the road at UConn. It's, like, to blow the regular season title outright. And, like, this team has been the best team in the league all season long. And, like, you know, like, they want to get that championship and, like, finish strong and go into the conference tournament, like, by far the best team.
Right.
So I think, like, they have a, like, 50-50 is, like, the best way to put it. Like, granted, we don't know if Evans is going to play. Like, we're both assuming he's going to play. If he doesn't, I would say it's more like 70-30 that they would win or that they would lose.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree with that. I think... if Evans doesn't play, like, if Evans probably could play, and I think UC has a 50-50 shot of whether, and you know, if he plays completely healthy, they have a 50-50 shot. If he plays with a slightly tweaked ankle, I still think the number is still close to 50-50. If he's outright not on the court, it's swings far in Wichita State's favor. I totally agree with that.
Like, the real question, like, you know, like, Gary and, like, Washington and Evans are all going to bring it on the road. It's just, like, if you can get, like, the contributions from your bench, like, if Cumberland can bring it, like, which, like, he's shown propensity to bring it, like, when the stage matters the most. It's some of the other guys, like, if you can, are you going to get anything from Jennifer, like, anything you get from him would be fine. And, like, Broom has got to, like, keep it going. And, of course, like, whatever you get from, like, Sosume and Brooks and, like, Trey Scott. Sorry for lumping you in there with Sosume, guys. Which was the thing that popped in my head. Like, whatever you get from those guys is, like, almost, like, gravy. And, like, at least offensively. And, like, of course, they have to give their best against Shaq Morris defensively. That's a really tough game.
That's the part that concerns me the most. Like, Shaq Morris had 13 points on 5 of 9 shooting against UC last time. He pretty much bullied his way into the paint whenever he wanted to. The bigs had a pretty good game against UC. I mean, Kyle Washington had 2 boards. 2. Like, Gary got his 8, which was fine. But Kyle had 2 rebounds in that game. Jacob Evans had 7. Like, if the UC is going to win this game, I don't know if UC can win in paint. Like, they're going to need their guards. And, like, that's what's concerning to me is that, like, if Evans is out of this game, I don't see Gary and Kyle carrying UC on Sunday. I just don't see it.
It's like, the one thing that really hit UC was, like, a lot of their shot selection in that first game. And, like, they went 7 of 23 from 3. Like, just a backbreaker. Like, free throws, pretty much the same. 2-point shots, pretty much the same. You see, like, outshot them percentage-wise, but they both made about the same. But it's, like, the 3, 8 of 18 against 7 of 23 in a 4-point game. Like, that's the type of thing. Like, your shot selection has to be a little bit smarter. Like, the one, like, thing with this team is, like, they can get, like, a little bit jumper happy if you put a zone on them. Like, which, like, is every college team ever, which is why everybody plays zone. But, like, it's like one of the flaws with this team offensively. Like, they've been really, like, good offensively. Like, the drop-off between, like, their, like, regulars, their non-conference, and their, like, league play offense is really slim, which is not the case for UC, like, every other year. That's normally a stark difference between the Savannah States and, like, the Wichita States. So, yeah. Like, I don't know. I think this team can pull it off. I'm going to say they win. Like, what the hell?
Yeah, why not? Seriously, I'm going to say the same thing. Yeah, who cares? They win. I'm not at all worried about it. I'm not going to really worry about it until after the game if they do lose. Like, up until then, I'm going to go 100% positivity and say that they win. Let's just do it. I mean, it's the last game of the season.
Yeah, my only I'm gonna say, like, my only concern, like, is with a loss would be like this would be affected their seed like much more so than if they lost in the conference tournament, because not only do they play a late conference tournament, they play the Thursday through Sunday, so like UC would be playing Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And we've seen, like, forever, Sunday game, like, nobody, the committee just doesn't give a shit. So it doesn't, and they played the last game, for some reason, the last game before the selection show. So nobody really cares about that game, committee-wise, even, like, I don't know, like, fan-wise. Yeah. Do people care about conference tournaments? I guess is, like, the overall question.
I care. I think it's interesting. I mean, it's basically it's a ride or die kind of situation. Like, you either play and win or you're done. Like, it's that level of absolution, like, brings out the best of college basketball and the players and the coaches and everything. Like, I love it. But that Sunday game is an interesting point. I hate it as well because it's like it doesn't. I feel like it doesn't really make a difference. Like you're basically you're already pre-selected to your seed even before playing that game. I know the committee says they don't really do anything until afterwards, but in the back of their mind, like, come on, it's I don't know.
Yeah, definitely. Like they have the bracket like done. Like at most, they flip you, but it doesn't even seem like lately they've done that. Like listen to any John Calipari rant about Kentucky's seed when they played the SEC tournament on Sundays. Like the famous example from the last time they played it on Sunday when Texas A&M had a higher seed than Kentucky, even though Kentucky swept them. It's like, if that happens to like Kentucky, it's definitely going to happen to Cincinnati or Wichita State or Houston. Like whatever team makes the final. Like as long as like you don't lose in the first round, like you should be fine. It's like, I love conference tournaments. Like, for all the reasons you mentioned, I hate the Sunday tournaments. Because, like, the committee just kind of, like, rendered them meaningless. Like, the Big Ten tournament is, like, fun because it gets, Big Ten always has a good bunch of good teams. But, like, by the time it gets to the championship game, it's like, do you even remember who won the Big Ten title last year?
Michigan State or Wisconsin, maybe? I'm just kidding. I don't know. Do you know? I know that was a rhetorical question, but
It was Michigan. I had to look it up. Okay. I actually did not know either.
That works.
But like this year, you'll know who wins the Big Ten tournament because they're having it a week early, which is really weird to see the Big Ten playing the same time as like the Colonial.
Yeah, it's like you look through like the schedule. It's like, oh, there's the SoCon and Colonial and the MEAC and the Missouri Valley. Oh, and then there's the Big Ten. Oh, okay, that's weird. Yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of so you know if we like you were kind of alluding to earlier, like when we started the podcast, like the seed is kind of UC is probably looking at a 3 if they win tomorrow or win on Sunday. And then win a couple of games in the AAC tournament. Like, even if they lose the title game, they're probably locked in. They can probably play their way into a 2 seed potentially if there's some upsets elsewhere and UC outright wins the rest of their games going forward, including the tournament, the AAC tournament games. But, like, they're probably looking at, like, a 3 or a 4 recently, right?
Yeah, like, if they win the league outright, and then win the conference, at least make the finals. I think there's a decent chance. Not a decent chance. Like, there's a solid chance they could get a 2 seed. Now, like the 1 seeds, just on the bracket matrix, Virginia, Villanova, Kansas, Xavier. It's hard to imagine any of them not being 1 seeds, even if like they lose their next 2 games.
Yeah.
Then Duke, Purdue, Michigan State, North Carolina on the 2 line. Like, I feel like Duke loses to Carolina or vice versa. Like, maybe if, like, one of them, like, loses and then gets bounced early in the ACC tournament, like, maybe. Or, like, if Purdue loses in the Big Ten tournament, maybe.
Oh, that's the thing. Is like,
But then, like, you also have to, like, Auburn or Tennessee flame out early in the SEC tournament.
Right. Like, UC's probably looking, like, realistically, this team is capable of no worse than a 4 seed, which I feel like when you're arguing a 3 and a 4, you're basically just splitting hairs because it's the same area of the bracket. It doesn't really matter, right?
Yeah, like it matters in the sense of just where you play in the second round, and like maybe like the tricky 14 seeds,
or right?
13 seeds, but like. Because they're going to be protected no matter what.
Yeah.
So, like, hopefully, like, they're protected in the sense that they play, like, in, like, Nashville or somewhere close and they don't get, like, sent to...
Spokane?
Yeah, like, God knows where to play somewhere stupid and then play some West Coast team.
Right.
Currently, just pick Jerry Palm's thing. He has them as a 2 seed.
These are your confidence Nashville. Builders presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Oh, give me that.
Yeah, I would definitely take that too. Like, and Lenardi has them as a 3 seed playing in Dallas, which isn't
also as, fine. That's a direct flight.
Except it would have playing Texas, Florida, or Providence. So, like, playing Texas in Dallas would be kind of unfair.
Yeah, but I mean, you also get another shot at Florida. I would definitely take another shot at Florida. Like, if it wasn't in Dallas, I would take that. Like, day of the week. Like, you pretty much have a guaranteed trip to, like, the second weekend, if you get that.
Yeah, that's true. Except, I don't know, like, Texas, if they actually get it, they would, like, scare the hell out of me, like, if they make the second round, just because they have a pro.
Oh, yeah, they have a pro underneath. Yeah, that's true.
Like, that's the one thing if, like, Oklahoma ended up as a 6 seed in, like, UC's region, which I don't even know if that's happening. Probably not, unless, like, Oklahoma got really good. Like, that would, like, terrify me. Or if, like, UC's a 7 in Oklahoma, or UC's a 2 and Oklahoma's a 7, that'd just scare me. Like, good players. Yeah. Like, one good player in March is, like, almost a deciding factor.
Yeah, and that's true. And that kind of, like, goes kind of back to our you know, discussion. Like, are you worried about anything going into the tournament? And it's like, you can't predict those things. Like, what if Jaron Cumberland goes off over the next 5 or 6 games and averages 20 points a game, and he goes white hot from 3? Like, you just can't predict that. It's just like, but, like, you have that one player that has a Kemba Walker-type year or Shabazz Napier-type year, or type stretch, and they can carry you far, but you just can't predict it. But to your point, it's like, I wouldn't want to see Trae Young in an NCAA tournament. No way.
Yeah, because you can, like, easily flip it and be like, what one of, like, those teams, like a Florida, just to use that one, Florida, Providence, or Texas, wants to play Cincinnati? Like, none of them. I don't want to go against, like, the Bearcats defense on the second round and give them their flaws. Like, I know, like, Florida, right. Florida beat UC. Like talent wise, they'd be, I guess, the most comparable.
But, but UC beat themselves so much. Florida did. They lost by 6 and had what, 23 turnovers?
Yeah. Like, they just really blew that game, like, badly. Like, any team, like, you play in that second round, unless, like, it's somebody, like, who was just ravaged by injury, like, you're playing like a flaw team. And right. Like, how good the Bearcats have been, like, defensively. Like, just, like, amazing all season long. And if it wasn't for Virginia, like, having, like, one of the best, like, defensive years ever, like, people would be raving about UC's defense even more.
Right.
And the offense, right. Like, and, for all, like, yeah. The knocks it gets, is, like, 43rd. It's, like, it's not even, like, it's, like really shitty. It's, like, right...
Oh, God.
Right there.
Yeah. Can we talk about that? Like, I feel like every time UC has a bad game or a loss, everyone comes out and says, well, Mick should probably hire an offensive coordinator. They only scored 65 against UConn a couple of weeks ago. Oh, offensive coordinator. They only scored 62 against UConn and lost. Offensive coordinators. Like, UC has, like, one of the best offenses in years. Like it's not like you're talking about, like, the second-rated, you know, defense in the country. And then you have the 200th rated offense. It's like 2-40. Like, how many teams in the country have a top 10 offense and a top 10 defense? I'm asking you, is it like one? Like, I don't know, Duke is pretty good recently.
Like, top 10 offense and defense, it's like nobody. Like, Michigan State's 11th offensively and 7th defensively.
Like, that's the thing, is like, if...
Like, Duke is 2nd and 15th.
Like, you're basically, people are bitching and moaning about having a shine on their diamond, or, like, a little scuff on the diamond. Like, when they're complaining about UC having a quote, bad offense when it's rated 40th in the country. Like, give me a break.
Yeah, because the difference between UC's offense and Virginia's offense isn't, like, that stark. Like, Virginia is, like, 37th. Like, they just shoot a little bit more threes than UC. It's like, I know, like, people, like, kind of, like, knock Virginia a little bit for that. But, like, nobody's like, oh, Virginia can never win the title because of their offense.
Well, like, exactly.
Like, it seems like that's, like, been given to UC just because of, like, the past years. Like, granted, that's just something. I don't think that has anything to do with the players. It has to do with, like, Mick Cronin. And, like, if it's, like, teams, like, underperform, like, that just something, like, he has to wear. Just like Huggins had to wear. Like, no matter how the team was. Like, it comes down, like, your coach is going to get blamed if they lose.
Oh, yeah. And that's the problem, is, like, the knock on Mick, and this could be a conversation that could extend this podcast for the next 3 hours, but the knock on Mick for the last 10 years was that he only focused on defense. And the fact is, he had to focus on defense because he had to rebuild this program from scratch. Like, he basically had to take a program that had, what, one scholarship player and turn it into something at least competitive, and he took it way farther than that to a consistent NCAA tournament team. And now that he actually has the horses, he's actually has the ability to run a good offense. And we've seen it this past season where they're the 40th ranked offense, and he has scores on the outside and the inside. He can score from Jacob Evans outside, or he can has Jerron Cumberland to drive inside, or Gary Clark and Kyle Washington score in the paint. Like, he has the horses to run a good offense. But I mean, it's even more impressed by the fact that he also has the mindset to keep this team as a top five defense. Like, I don't know how you can really knock what Mick Cronin has done over the last 2 years. I mean, yeah, it's taken a while for the offense to come along, but that's just because it had to. Like, it just had to. So.
Yeah, and just, like, looking through, like, the past, like, tournament performances, it's not like it's been, like, their defense, really, that's been the thing that's, like, gotten them beat. Like, their offense against UCLA, your offense against UCLA was, like, overall good. They just got shredded defensively. Like, their offense against St. Joe's was really good. That was just a crazy game that they lost because Octavius Ellis couldn't dunk it before the buzzer ended. That still makes me sad. Like, those two games, like, incredible offense. Like, so defense. The last tournament game they really played poorly offensively was Kentucky, which had like an elite defense, and then the Harvard they played.
You were playing Kentucky, who had lost a game all season. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. And like Harvard in 2014, like that's a long way to go because they go back even further. Creighton, like their offense was fine in that game. That was a toss up game. They lost to Doug McDermott.
And then once you go back that far, you're getting into the realm of, yeah, we all agree UC had crap offenses for like a decade.
None of those players are like remotely close to being on this team because that was like 6 years ago.
Right. So I don't know. It's I always hate that argument because you're always getting those people coming out and saying, oh, wow, UC would have won if Mick Cronin wouldn't focus 100% of his practices on offense. First of all, no coach does that. If any coach focused 100% of a practice on offense, that coach is going to win like five games. And two, like, the data says that the offense is better over the last couple of years, and it's only getting better, and it's only continuing to improve. So I don't know. I guess you just don't fight the trolls is the lesson learned there.
Except in this case, like, the trolls are like the national media.
Even though, and that's the thing, is I feel like even the national media comes around, they're always like, the national media, their first talking point is he has a punishing defense, which agreed, and that's something I'd like to, you know, put a feather in my cap on. But two, they're also saying like coming into the season, that the change with UC is that they actually have an offense. They have players to run up the score if they need to, which is encouraging to see. I just feel like you see it among the parts of the fan base, and maybe they aren't really part of the fan base, who, whenever they have a chance, they always come out and say, oh yeah, Mick Cronin doesn't coach offense. He's a terrible offensive coach.
Yeah, just like take Jerron Cumberland, like for example. Like he's been like good this season, like overall, like a positive offensive rating. He's like clearly like not one of the best offensive players. But, like, take his season and, like, put it on that, like, the team that lost to Harvard, and that team is a lot better. And, like, he's your fourth best scorer on this team.
Yeah, you put Jerron Cumberland on any of those, like, I don't know, like, late Cashmere Wright, like, teams, Like, they're easily they easily get out of the first game winning those games. Easily.
Yeah, definitely. Like, you just, like, the talent, like, they have is, like, ridiculous. And, like, people are just using, like, old Knox, I think, to, like, try to bring down this team. Like, their offense wasn't the problem against Wichita State. Like, their offense really wasn't the problem with Houston, either. Like, their offense wasn't the problem against Xavier. Their offense has been the problem once, and it was against, like, Florida. Like, you can, like, look at some of the close call games, like Buffalo. Like, the offense was definitely the problem against Buffalo. But that game was on November 20th, and they don't turn the ball over now like they turned the ball over then. It's like, it's a completely different team. Well, not completely different, but, like, it's a much more efficient team than it was back then.
Right. Right, yeah. And that's a good point. I mean, like, the any kind of offensive issues they had in the beginning of the year were caused by one thing, and it was turnovers. And, like, they don't turn the ball over enough as much anymore. Any quote offensive issues they have at the end of, at this part of the season, I just chalk up to having a bad game. Like Houston, they lost 67-62. They just you're just running into a buzzsaw. You know, you're facing a white hot Houston Cougars team on the road. I mean, not in the most, you know, hellish of environments, but you're just players are entitled to have bad games, like, once in a while. It's fine.
Yeah, like the only, like, major, like, statistical knock you can have is, like, their free throw shooting is not good. And
when is it ever, though? Is it ever?
Fair point.
Go ahead, though.
But, like, their offensive rebounding is, like, insane. Like, they're, like, right up there with, like, North Carolina. Like, up there with North Carolina on offensive rebounding. Like, that's pretty good. Like, yeah. And that helps, like, make up for some of the things that, like, you may be less efficient at. Like, which is, I think, the turnovers. They turn it over 17% of the time. At least they have in conference play. Which is, like, one of the lowest in the league. So, like, it's not even, like, that terrible.
Yeah, so I feel like if you see Wichita State on Sunday, it's not going to be because of the offense. It's just not. Like, they're either going to lose 80-70, or they're going to lose 75-70. They're not going to lose, like, 70-40. They're just not. Like, that's just not the makeup of this team. But if they do lose, it's going to be because of the offense. It's too bad.
If they lost 70-40, that'd be, I think everybody would be right to freak out.
Yeah.
Let's end this podcast by jumping back in time a little bit. The football schedule got released, and since I personally haven't done a podcast in a couple of weeks, you haven't done one in a couple of,
2 months. Just 2 months. Yeah, it's okay, just 2 months. Go ahead.
Let's write down the football schedule. Bearcats, we all knew they started at UCLA. They play Miami University, Alabama A&M, Ohio, at UConn, Tulane, a bye week at Temple, at SMU, Navy, UCF, at US or USF, at UCF, and then the end of the year with world rival East Carolina. What do you think about the schedule? Like, how did you feel like it laid out pretty well for, like, maybe a bowl game run? Or do you think, like, they have a tough one?
It's kind of nice. So the bye week there is sitting right in the early part of the AAC schedule, like, right smack dab in the middle of the season as a whole, October 13th, which I think is good timing. It's nice that for the first time in a while, UConn is, I don't know, the first time ever, maybe, UConn is the first AAC game of the season, and they get Tulane at home as the second game of the season before that bye week. Before that, you have, I mean, which is not dictated by the AAC, you have Ohio, Alabama, A&M, Miami. So the first half of the season, I feel like it sets up in a way that really favors UC in the fact that, you know, Fickell is still trying to build the program, so he still needs to have some gimme games on the schedule to really start, really kind of build momentum as he's continuing to build that program. There's some games at the first half of the schedule where I feel like sets up for UC to build momentum into this in general. Like, I don't think they can beat UCLA on the road. But Miami, Alabama, A&M, Ohio, UConn, and Tulane, is it out of the realm of possibility that they go 5-0 during that stretch? Or I don't know, 4-1? I don't think so. I don't think they can't. I think they could potentially win at least four of those games and head into that bye week at, like, I don't know, like 4-2, maybe, which would be fine with me. The scary part I have is after that bye week, because they have at Temple, at SMU, and we were kind of talking about this before the podcast started. SMU is going to have a drop off losing Chad Morris, but it's still at SMU, and then you have back-to-back-to-back Navy, UCF, USF, and then at UCF, and that scares the hell out of me. But the first half of the schedule sets up nicely.
Yeah, if they're going to make a bowl game or see, like, considerable progress record-wise, like, that first half of the schedule is it. Because you play, like you said, two bowl teams? Because I think Ohio made a bowl game and UCLA made a bowl game. Just take away the UCLA game, I'll probably lose. Like, you take your chances, because you're definitely going to beat Alabama A&M. So it's, like, just getting three of those other games. And if you, like, you can't beat Tulane at home, like, that's kind of sad. And, like, they should. Right. Like, UConn is, like, who knows? Like, you think...
UConn lost the only thing that gave them any semblance of offense in the last decade, and he's now the offensive coordinator at SMU. So, I don't see UConn as a losable game. I think UC can go into UConn and beat them.
Okay.
I'm going to say that. I'm going to say that right now. I'll change my tune maybe September, or like mid-September, depending on how the team's doing, but right now I say they beat UConn.
I'll ride with you on that one. So, like, really, like, the big game that stands out is Ohio. Like, that's kind of like the fulcrum game.
Yeah,
can beat Ohio, who is, like, always decent, like, you can, like, start looking ahead to, like, it's like if they can pull off one or two at the end to make a bowl game. But if, like, they drop that game to Ohio, that just makes everything harder. Because, like, Tulane, like, is decent. And, like, that was a pretty close game here, but UC won. I guess you could say the same thing about UConn. Although, like, UConn does lose, as you mentioned, like, their offense. Don't they lose their quarterback?
Maybe. I just think it's most important they lost their offensive coordinator. Yeah, and a very good one at that.
Yeah, because, like, offense, like you said, they were good at. And that was another game. Like, UC, like, somehow pulled that game off.
Yeah.
Like, so, like, you pull those two together, you have four wins if you beat Miami, which they are capable of losing to Miami.
And it's at Paul Brown, so it should be chock full of UC fans. Should be a pseudo-home game, hopefully.
Yeah, definitely, which seems like the whole point of moving that game to Paul Brown.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, good job on Mike Bone for that. It almost seems like the schedule this year sets up similarly to last year. Like, last season, they led off against Austin Peay, but then one of their toughest games of the year was at Michigan, which obviously they lost. They played well, but they lost, and they played Miami. But this year they have at UCLA, which will be a tough game. They'll probably lose that. But then if they go into that Ohio game, 2-1, playing, you know, hopefully beating the tar out of both Miami and Alabama A&M, like, I don't see how, I mean, I could see them, you know, beating Ohio and then beating UConn and Tulane. But I think you're right. I think Ohio is that pivotal early game to kind of get a read on where this team is.
Next, that's a tricky test, and that's the type of game they just haven't won the last few years. Like, if it's somebody decent, they seems like UC's just found a way to lose. Like, look no further than, like, last year they lost to Marshall at home.
Got pasted by Marshall at home. We'll see. I mean, I think this year they, I think we'll see a better team. I'm still. We talked about this last year. I mean, I'm still worried about the offensive line. I'm still worried about the skill position. I'm still worried about quarterback, especially. I'm going to be scared as hell going to any game with Hayden Moore as a starter, unless he made some drastic improvements this offseason. I hope they have a complete open committee in both the spring ball and fall. But yeah, I mean, I think if we have a good read on this team by the bye week and they're at like 4-2, I could see a bowl game in their future. I mean, I could see them beating either Temple, SMU, or ECU, and then, you know, making a bowl game and then building on that for an even better 2019. We'll see. We'll see how it goes. But, I mean, I'm pretty optimistic, like, just with the way the schedule lays out.
Yeah, cause like, getting the first six, like, just a winning record, because it has to be winning. If they're 3-3, like, the back stretch is really hard.
Really tough, yeah. You're up against the wall at that point.
Especially with more road games than home games at the end. No, if they play this amount, I can't read.
Right.
But, like, the three really tough road games. Like, going to SMU is probably going to be tough. And, like, they just haven't had any success against Temple, like, lately. And, like, UCF is be good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think... At this point, you can almost chalk up, like, Navy, USF, and UCF as auto losses. UCLA auto loss. So, I mean, there's four right there. And then, you know, between the other eight, you have a few toss-ups and a few, you know, auto wins, you'd hope. I guess it depends on how, you know, this team in the spring and in the fall and in those first few games. Hopefully you start to develop, you know, a few more auto wins than toss-ups among those eight.
Yeah. The sad thing is, like, you can't really, like, schedule, like, auto wins in league play just yet because they've lost, like, every team in the league the last, like, 2 years.
Right. And that's the thing is, like, right now it's like, I'm calling the UConn game as a win, but it's still like a toss-up. It's still a toss-up. I still think it's skewed towards not a win, but it's very much a toss-up, as is, like, Tulane, Temple, SMU, and ECU. Like, those are all toss-ups.
It's like, last time they went to UConn, they lost by points. They didn't score a touchdown.
Right.
And just like we said, like, all of last season, like, this team has to, like, prove it on the road. Like, the only conference road game they've won, like, the last few years was against Tulane, where Tulane missed an extra point tie or a field goal to win. I don't know, something stupid.
No, UC got gifted a few wins last year. They probably should have been 2-10, but you know, thank you Chuck Martin and thank you whoever cooked field goals for Tulane.
Oh, you're not going to count the UConn game as a gift?
Okay, yeah, sure, why not? One, they should have been 1-11, and yeah. Thank you, guy who got called for a, what was it? It was a 15-yarder, but I don't know what it was. I think it was like a taunting penalty or something.
I think it was because like UConn scored like it with like the there was no time left.
That's right.
That was a
yeah, and he got called for a taunting, and they got pushed back 15 yards, and their kicker also shanked it. So yeah, so thank you kickers, and thank you Chuck Martin. Otherwise, oh man, that record would have looked a lot worse last year.
But, like, there's, like, plenty of, like, reason to be optimistic, because it's the optimistic podcast now.
Yeah, it is. We'll see. We'll see how the next couple of weeks go. Yeah, hopefully UC beats Wichita State tomorrow, or I keep saying Monday. Well, I don't know when you're going to post this, Scott, but let's just say Sunday, the 4th, and I hope they have a good run in the AAC tournament.
Oh, was there anything you wanted to say about National Signing Day before we close for good? Like, you see in a top 50 class, like, best in the... That's all I have to say.
That was nice. It was nice to get... It was really great to grab Tavion Thomas, a former Oklahoma commit, as well as... who's the tight end they picked up from... damn it. Instant Googling. Come on. Leotavian Thomas, so he's going to be another running back slash linebacker to add to this core. And then, yeah, who was the... God damn it. This is a great dead air. Leonard Taylor. Leonard Taylor, the tight end from Springfield, Ohio, who looks like a Joey Bosa-type edge rusher if they play him at defensive end, but also gives him another option in the offense to play along the line. So, yeah, those are two signing day snags they had that just, you know, further... I mean, just, it just basically it further improves the image as a hell of a recruiter. Suddenly, ice to the snow to snowman or whatever that saying goes.
Actually, just looking through like Taylor's like profile on 24/7 since you mentioned him, like he had a late push from Jimbo Fisher, and hey, it could have gone the other way, and for like Fickell to pull like him in, like a pretty big deal, like it. They talked about, like, the Ohio wall and, like, a couple of big flips, both, like, Springfield and, in Thomas's case, like, Dayton. Like, getting both of those guys to stay is, like, pretty huge.
And that's the thing is, like, those two guys, like, you look back, even during, like, the Kelly and Jones days, like, especially during the Jones days, because Jones, great recruiter at UC, and he had the Big East flag to fly. You know, the we're in an important conference kind of flag to fly. And even he struggled to go up and grab like kids around Dayton and Springfield because that's just Ohio State country. I mean, hell, even the Michigan schools and some Indiana schools go into Dayton and Springfield and can pluck players out. But Fickell's doing that, and he's convincing them to come to UC, and he's doing it under the AAC flag. And that's just blew my mind. Like, I would kill for Fickell to have, you know, a Big 12 or an ACC flag to fly, because man, it was the damage he could do in this state if he was able to get.
It's like the only like a drawback, if there is one, is that he is gonna have a Big 12 or ACC flag to fly. It'll be a different school because all the AAC coaches get hired for other jobs.
Exactly. Oh man.
Yeah, like now we end on a negative note because now like, I'm disappointed that the Big 12 didn't expand and UC got screwed under that again.
That's okay. We'll end it on a high note. I'm going to predict UC beats Wichita State 78-76 on Sunday and claims their first share of, or their lone share of a conference championship since, I don't know, Conference USA?
Oh, fun game. When was the last time UC won an outright league title?
2004.
Oh, wow. That was easy. You got it easily.
What was the last year that you know, Bob Huggins coached the team?
Touche.
It's like pretty easy to figure it out. Thank you. God. Yeah, thank you for firing Mick during the dark age that Mick Cronin had to clean up. But that's another conversation for another day.
2004, I believe the last time UC won a conference tournament, too. That's a really long-ass time ago.
Yeah. That's the thing. It's like, I mean, you know, not to end it on a sour note, but I don't care about co-conference champions. I want hardware, and I want only UC's name on that trophy. I won a regular season title and or a tournament title and or a regional title and or a national title in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah. Dang, with that realization, like I knew UC didn't win one in the Big East, but man, 2004, a long time ago. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Time to bring home that hardware.
Seriously. Like, it's just been too long. These teams have been too talented. Of late, recently.
Definitely, like the program's too to have an outright title. Well, to be back on top.
Exactly. So hopefully they actually, you know, they get that first one on Sunday.
Yeah. And we think they're gonna do it. So go Bearcats.